Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Griese! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And good morning once again. This is Coach Chuck Griese. Every Wednesday at noon, American Tennis can be heard on the UR Tennis Network. That's the letter U, the letter R, number 10, and S Network. Every Monday, Lisa Stone's Parenting Aces is on at noon. And 2 hours from right now, 2 o'clock Eastern Time, Jason Haynes has American College program on. So always come to the UR Tennis Network and you can keep up with what's going on in the tennis world. We state every week that our job is to have you stand up and to speak out. Actually, that's your job. It's not our job to just remind you to do it. That is your job to stand up and to speak out and say those things that people need to hear, not just want to hear. And we're going to talk a lot about that today, about why in the heck people don't stand up and speak out. We're going to give you a different way of looking at things, and we'll get right to that in a second. But we always say that Edmund Burke's statement about this is that all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men, good people to do nothing. I told a friend last night, as I made the long drive from Florida up to South Carolina, and now I'm headed to Virginia, West Virginia, over to Indiana for, actually, I don't want to tell you how many years it's been, folks, but I'm going up to a reunion this weekend that I'm really, really excited about. But I told a good friend that, you know, we have a duty, we have a responsibility, and it just really is amazing how people have been dumbed down or whatever. There's so much information that trying to get the right information and trying to learn about what to pick out of all the information is like drinking the right water out of a fire hose. And how you do that, I mean, that's the whole trick. And we're going to talk about it and give you some ideas about how to do this. UR Tennis Network, if you want to call in today and talk to our guest, which we actually have a live show. We're doing a live show today, and I'm very fortunate to have the assistant coach at the University of South Carolina, Ryan Young, with me today. Ryan, thanks for being here, and it's wonderful to have you on. It's your second or third time over the past 2 or 3 years on UR Tennis Network.
Yeah, Coach, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here, and
Always good to spend time with you.
Well, I'll give that number. It's area code 714-583-6853. 714-583-6853. Also, go to chuckcreasy.net. That's K-R-I-E-S-E.net, where you can get every show that I've done over the past 2 years and a month now. We're in our third year. We've had over 100 shows. And if you go to chuckcreasy.net, it's pretty nice because you just click on the American Tennis Radio, and I've written about a paragraph about each one of the shows. You don't have to just blindly jump in there and wonder what they were talking about. We've got a pretty good description of all the shows. But ChuckCreasy.net also has my camp dates. It also has some of the blogs and position papers that I write. Also, you can order any one of my 6 books there. It'll give you information about how to go to Amazon. And then just general tennis stuff. And I got to credit, you know, Lisa Stone. I talk about her every week, but my golly, is she doing a job. The Parenting Aces program has just really taken off. And also her blog is so good. J.P. Weber also in the Atlanta area, J.P. Weber has We Coach Tennis, now over 2,000 people on the Facebook site. And my hat's off to J.P. Weber with what he has created there. And J.P., if you're listening, they say that you create a monster. Ultimately, you work real hard, create a monster you have to feed, and then you can't feed it, but then it starts devouring you. But heck of a job with the We Coach Tennis program on Tuesdays at noon on the Yellow Ball Network, if you can believe that one, folks. But at least we've got tennis out there. Today, Ryan, I want to talk today about something I was hit over the head by something that someone did for me, and that's Alex Slezak. I've asked him to come on the show next week. He's a coach up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and he said he's been listening to my shows for the last 2 years. and he has been writing down all of the one-liners or whatever people want to call them. I call it loaded language. And he's written them all down, and he sent them to me. And here's the list. This is ridiculous. And I couldn't have said this many words. But I'm sure that you've been around me long enough. You probably, does everybody hear that paper rustling? There's about 10 pages here. And I'm saying there's got to be 200 or 300 of these. But I want to talk about loaded language. First of all, this is, I don't know, this disclaimer or the reason why, Ryan. But I always, when I was a young boy, I had to go to all these reading classes, and I had, they said young Charles couldn't basically stay focused on one thing or another, and I'm so glad I came up in the days when they didn't dope you up with drugs, so for ADD, XYZ, or whatever they call this stuff now. First of all, if we start talking about ADD too much, folks, go to fastbrain.com, BRAIIN.com, 2 shows with Dr. Jim Poole, and he's approaching it like the book The Edison Gene. That's a fantastic book about ADD. But Coach Jim says that the smartest people are usually the ADD people because their brain is evolving, but you've been around me enough to know that if anybody probably would have been taking that ADD medicine when I was a kid, I usually got the back of the hand, right? I mean, do you know what I'm talking about? I think you're wired. Athletes, by the way, folks, are usually wired that way. Did you get more of the back of the hand than pills?
Yes, absolutely. It's funny. I can remember in college, Coach, thinking that I used to tell people that you were like Russell Crowe. You were like the guy from The Beautiful Mind. The way that your mind, works, it is definitely ADD and full-fledged, full speed ahead.
Well, I mean, anybody that's ever visited my office, you know, I've hired the best person ever. My assistant, Bill Simpson, is best I've ever seen it. Understanding that, but also keeping things really, really well organized, and I am organized. You see my notes here, Ryan. Now, it's not organization to anyone else, but I've got everything here in my little method of doing it. But this is my disclaimer, I guess, but always I knew the power of sayings, the power of loaded language. So let's go back to 1956 or 57. Pepsi Cola hits the spot, 12 whole ounces. That's a lot, twice as much for a nickel, too. Pepsi Cola's drink for you, that's 1955. Gosh, I mean, 1960, running on the same ticket with John Kennedy, the senator for Indiana at that time, it was Birch Bayh. Evan Bayh later became governor and senator, but Birch Bayh said, hey, look me over. I'm your kind of guy, or he's your kind of guy. First name is Birch, second, last name is Bayh. Candidate for senator for who's your state? Indiana will do more than anyone's. Now, that's been, I know the whole thing, but I hadn't thought about that for years. It had been 40 or 50 years, but I remembered it. And my mother was the worst. She instigated, I guess she used to say, soap is cheap, books are free, never be dirty or dumb. Or don't take any wood nickels, son. And you go, what in the world is she talking? Did your mother ever hit you with sayings like this?
I can't remember any off the top of my head. I can remember about 100 of yours.
Was that because she was smacking your head?
Yeah, I was usually getting hit with a Gatorade bottle.
Yeah. And listen, the thing is, we know that after dealing with so many tennis players over the year, we know for a fact that athletes, usually ADD type, and back then we just said, hey, his attention, you didn't even say attention problem. You basically said pay attention, and you had to sit. We had 50. I'll give it away. Okay, I'm going back to my 50th elementary school education, folks. I'm giving away how old. Now, the guy at the fair down in Charleston guessed that I was 49, and they're experts, aren't they? They're experts. North Charleston Fair. We were out there. I was out there with my wife, Jo. Now, he guessed my weight perfect, so I didn't get the stuffed animal. So I said, okay, let's go for age. He said 49. Now, they're experts, so maybe I shouldn't be going back to this 53-year reunion. But the bottom line on the thing is we stayed together for all those years. I'm going back to a reunion where 40 out of 49 kids are still alive. We've lost 9. But people say, your elementary school education, St. Catherine of Siena, Indianapolis, Indiana, where we actually, you know, it's been torn down years ago, but we're getting together, and that's ridiculous. But you've got to understand that was a time where you had one job. Your dad had one job in one neighborhood his whole life, and then people had one job in many neighborhoods. They had to travel. Now people have many jobs in many neighborhoods, and our neighborhoods are not like they were. But loaded language kept me in check, Ryan. So. Mm-hmm. But what I want to talk to you about, I'm going to let you take over here in a second and try to explain it, because you've taken on a lot of fire hose information. When you were young, you did not have the cell phones.
Right.
You came up without cell phones, and you were just getting the hang on computers and smack, dab, bam. All of a sudden, you have all this information coming at you. Now you have a job where it's incredible how much water is coming to you out of the fire hose. One of the things my mother used to say, Ryan, was that discernment is, she used to tell me, pray for discernment, son. She said, you must be able to read below the surface where there are only cliches and facts. You must be able to see underneath where there are, and I always have said cliches, facts, opinions, feelings, needs of people. But the discernment in drinking the right water out of a fire hose. Now, so what I'd like for you to do before we get into so loaded language, and Alex Slezak, next week, folks, Alex Slezak is going to talk to us about, we might be on this loaded language for 5 or 6 weeks, but it is incredibly powerful. It's been powerful in my life, but it helps me to take broad concepts and get them simplified. Now, talk about your job. Talk about the information overload that has happened. You gave a brilliant talk to a few kids at a camp a few weeks back about the dangers of cell phone. Mm-hmm. All right, so I'm just going to be quiet here a minute and let you talk a little bit about your experiences with this.
Well, I think first I'll use a personal, you know, personally, you know, you are the loaded language guy, and playing for you, I still remember hundreds of them, you know, and here's an amazing thing is this morning, we were actually training and we had two guys and we're playing a set, and I just got back from Florida last night, so I've been missing for about a week, and they're out there competing, and the set got to four all, and about two all, both guys' body language started bothering me, how they were responding to points, how they were letting everything affect them and letting things linger on, and they'd be upset about a point, the previous point that they played, and they'd step up to hit a serve, and without any movement forward or any thinking forward or putting that last point behind them, and immediately coach your do the next right thing came to me when I was watching this match and trying to think how I was going to get them to employ that and be able to move forward. And so the loaded language is such an amazing thing. You know, so I stopped the set and I said, look, the next four games or the remainder of this set, I don't even want you guys to think about winning or losing. I want you guys to just think about responding and to do the next right thing. So if you hit a terrible forehand, I want you to you know, be tough, be a warrior, you know, not drop your shoulders, not drop your head, not mope and pout like a junior, you know, or like somebody who's saying I'm a bad tennis player, but to take that on and do the next right thing. So focus on what needs to happen next. Not focus on what's just happened. And even me as a coach, so I naturally, I guess, because I said to them, I started thinking about it and how I need to respond to them and how I need to coach in doing the next right thing. But it was such a powerful thing. And immediately they took it upon themselves because however they're perceiving or whatever they're seeing happening in the match or seeing in themselves, do the next right thing, they immediately will they'll immediately take that on. And if I'm coaching right and I've instilled in them what I feel like they need to do next, you know, they will do the next right thing. And the body language immediately changed with Zhen, immediately changed the level of tennis on the court. So it was really encouraging, and I had no clue that we were going to be talking about loaded language this morning. So that's not ironic, but pretty cool that the loaded language was so powerful, and it was four words, you know, do the next right thing. I didn't have to stop them for 15 minutes and over talk, but it was just a powerful thing. Do the next right thing. Don't be emotional. Don't think too much. Just do. You know, it set an action in motion for them to think for themselves, and it gave them a governor to live by.
Well, you bring up that actually do the next right thing was Coach Larry Penley, the golf coach at Clemson, playing with him one of the five or six times I was honored enough to play with such a great golfer and a great man. But he, I remember, he hit a ball way over in the woods, and I said, he hit it far there, but I said, even great players hit it in the woods. And I go over there, Larry, I said, man, you're going to take a bad score. He said, nah, golf, it's your next shot. It's not your bad shot. It's your next shot. You do the next right thing. And he went to do a Chichi Rodriguez shot. He hit it around the bush, curved it back. It might have bumped off of three or four trees. Nah. But he knew it was unbelievable. He worked the ball like a tennis player works the ball on a tennis court, and he put it up on the green. He says, it's always the next shot. You do the next right thing. And so, of course, how applicable is that to tennis, that you don't fall apart on point number 38, 61, 96, you do the next right thing. And if you hang around, you always get another chance. But the other thing that Pike Rowley told me, his preacher one time was saying, you when loaded language helps you put a face on stuff. In other words, you know, you basically, a long time ago, my mother, who's a great philosopher, she used to just say, when you're addressing people, it's not your bad, your actions are bad, you know, and And I remember this is a mistake we all make as teachers. We say, you're wrong, you're bad. She said, she always used to say, you affirm the person, like, this is, Ryan Young, this is so much less than, you know, you are, you know, this is not your standard. And so you name it, claim it, tame it. That's what you did today. You took a broad concepts of the kids not concentrating. You didn't need to bring them over and say, okay, you're not concentrating, doing this. You name it, claim it, tame it, but you don't ever name it, claim it, blame it. I want to go a little deeper here, though, Ryan, and talk about young people today. The danger of cell phones. Now, I heard your talk. Let me make this point. Let me back up. The Talent Code's a brilliant book out there. Everybody's been reading it. But it basically talks about how people learn in the myelin tissue in the brain and how you have to stimulate the myelin tissue in the brain. In other words, when the person is hunting, when their inquisitive mind starts hunting for solutions, your RAS, reticular activating system, starts looking for answers, and you stimulate that myelin tissue from the inside out, not outside in, not being given answers, not a GPS of a cell phone or a Google or something like this. But when you stimulate from the inside out, then you leave this imprint in your brain. And the Talent Code talks about 10,000 repetitions and all this, but it's not 10,000 repetitions from the outside in. It's 10,000 repetitions inside out where it matters a lot. But the point is that as we've made things easier, we haven't made them better. That when things get easier, it doesn't leave the indentation in the myelin tissue of the brain. So, you know, whether it's easy to pick up, it's easy to put down, hard to pick up, it's hard to put down, the appreciation isn't there. Mm-hmm. But they don't learn it. Mm-hmm. You repeat things to kids now over and over and over and over again. And very early in my coaching career, Ryan, I knew that you had to basically combine a teaching moment with an emotional experience. That's when people are broken and they are almost dead out, then things take root. I was talking to a coach yesterday, and I said, until losing hurts enough, kids don't learn how to win. He said, well, what do you mean? I said, when it's so painful that you don't ever want it to happen again and you want to throw your rackets away or sell your rackets, then the indentation happens in your brain where now you're hungrier than a starving dog looking at a meat truck, as a loaded language goes. But I want you to relay the story that you gave about your kids at camp, okay?
That's great. I just had this thought. If the internet is a good thing. It's not a bad thing. But the thing that we got to decipher between is efficiency versus easy. Efficiency is a great thing. You know, the internet and even in coaching can make things efficient. You know, I think they want to call it the progressive generation, and I'm not so sure exactly how we're progressing or if it's even a great thing. But we have the opportunity to be more efficient, and however, I think sometimes, because we get things so quickly now that it has become easy, or we think everything should become easy because we can get so much information easily. And one of my friends, she was studying, and we were kind of actually having the same exact conversation about cell phones. And she was writing a children's book and said that I think 18-year-olds and below spend an average of 7.5 to 8 hours a day on technology. And that totally blew my mind. And one thing that we do at South Carolina is at dinner when we're traveling on the road or at dinner, we specifically say you're not allowed to have your cell phones out, so that we have to be with each other. And the key word is engagement, and it's learning to engage.
Which is scary. It's scary because.
Well, I guess it's just like an engagement. You know, that's a scary thing. But it's learning to engage, and that having so much information and so much access, you don't learn to engage. And so I was talking to some kids at, I think it was your camp a couple of weeks ago, about how cell phones, and I feel it in myself, is I get information thrown at me all day long, and I become so reactive that I actually don't know how to – I have to remind myself to engage and be proactive in a direction that I need to head, and I got to make sure that I'm prioritizing. And so the passion of looking at a Roger Federer serve or Roger Federer forehand on the internet is a great thing, and to study and to learn information. But then to go in and hit and practice it against the wall for 2 or 3 hours until you have your forehand, or hit it on the ball machine, or practice sets and just to be proactive and go out and actually do and be I'm reading his book now, Mansfield's Manly Men, and one of the core things that he says is action is character. You know, you can't have character without action. And so I feel like this progressive generation has become almost inactive. They watch their internet all day, or they watch Netflix all day, or they watch movies, TV, video games. But you never really learn until you engage in actually doing something, whether that's tennis or piano or who cares what, but something. And so I feel like the efficiency is a great opportunity that we have with this modern technology, but we can't sacrifice the action and the hard work and the engagement and passion that comes with spending time learning a trade.
Yeah, and you know, the danger is this word that I've written right here that is the most terrifying word that I've ever come up with, and that's the word of desensitization. Desensitization. And let me tell you, it's been many years ago, in the late 80s, there was a movie out, Gremlins. Do you remember that movie? It was this movie where these little creatures killed something, and then they were comical. Then they killed something, then they were comical. Somebody died, then they didn't. It was back and forth with your emotions. And my friend came out with me, and he said, you know, we had taken a group to watch it, I think a camp group, and he said to me, "Wow, that went funny. Wasn't that entertaining?" And I said, "No, it was terrifying to me." And he said, "Why?" I said, "The desensitization. It had me sad, angry, almost laughing, back and forth. And a couple years ago, I saw the most ridiculously terrible movie, really, I've seen years, was The Lone Ranger with Johnny Depp. My wife and I were on our our anniversary. We went to the drive-in movie down, and they have one in Beaufort, South Carolina, and we had a getaway weekend. We thought we'd go to the drive-in. I have never seen a worse movie ever, and it was just for that very reason. Your emotions were everywhere and all over the place, and the desensitization of that movie, I said, "Are you kidding me?" It had these little rabbits at one scene, and then the Cavendish gang ripped the heart out of a guy the next moment, and I'm going, "Whoa!" And it really is pathetic, because I don't know whether this is a plan or what, but basically the desensitization is all over the place. Have you noticed how in the news media, Ryan, and folks out there, if you want to call in today at 714-583-6853. Wait till after our break, and I'll pick up the phone calls. 714-583-6853. But our news media jumps from one story to the next, to the next, to the next. Every week, you know, I mean, I remember the natural disasters. You had the oil spill. Then you had the Iceland volcano. Then you had the tsunami over in Japan. Then you had this, then you have that. Now, politically, every week it's a different one, and people's heads start spinning. And the terrifying thing is, we wonder why there's a death of outrage. Bill Bennett's book in the 90s, The Death of Outrage, was a tremendous, tremendous insight of the coming times. But when information comes at you so fast, nobody's able to grasp it. Mm-hmm. So you told the kids today do the next right thing, or you might tell them, love many, trust few, paddle your own canoe. Sounds cute and sounds catchy, but what's happening is the cell phones and everything is basically training our young people to jump ship into another one, jump ship in another one. If at first you don't succeed, we jump ship, change the channel. Instead of try again till your hands bleed. A boy a couple summers ago asked me, Coach, I got to have a back end. What? Tell me the trick. I said, the trick is this. You hit it on the backboard until your hands bleed. You're going to have a back end. You know, the Pancho Gonzalez thing, I don't know if this is true. If anybody knows the real story on this, but I heard Yvonne Lendl went to see Pancho Gonzalez about serving and said, can you help me with your serve back in his early years? I already put a ball, four balls down, one in each corner, and he goes, bam, hit the first one, bam, hit the second one, bam, hit the third, bam, hit the fourth. He said, learn to do that. And that was the most true thing he could have ever said. Yeah. So this word terrifies me. Hmm. Could you speak about this a little bit? And the two kids you had at your camp, you talked about the 9-year-old kid that was hungry and the 14-year-old kid that just was not.
Yeah. Okay. So we had camp, and it was. You know, I love being around little kids. You can just It's almost like they haven't been tainted yet, or they haven't been the world. I don't know. The world hasn't washed them, or I don't know something. But little young kids, young boys, and girls. But boy, this was a boy, and he was just full of life and full of energy, and you know, he was running down any hill he could find or trying to jump up on my shoulders, or you know, just full of life. And it just caught my eye and made me stop and think. You know, we had this other kid who was 14, and at every single break he would run to his cell phone and get on his cell phone and get on Facebook or Snapchat or whatever, and at lunch he wouldn't talk to any of the kids. He sat by himself and was on his cell phone. And then even one time we had matches going on, and he jumps on his cell phone, and I jump and I kind of say, hey, look, I need you to cheer on your teammates. You know, we're out here to be around each other and play. And instead of putting his phone away, he put his bag between his legs and kept his phone out to try to hide his phone from me. So I walked over and, you know, forced him to put his phone in his bag. And I really made me think, like, where does it happen, you know, and where and why does it happen? You know, here this young kid, he's 9 years old, and he's everything I feel like that a grown-up should be, full of life, full of energy, engaging and you know, just all over the place and happy and full of joy. And here this 14-year-old kid can't have a conversation, doesn't want to have a conversation, isn't engaging at all. And it really made me think, you know, how the internet just not the internet, but technology.
Well, no. And you're saying easy versus efficiency, using it for easy instead of efficiency.
Yeah, and how there was no search for anything. There was no hunger. There was no passion. Everything was kind of deadened, and it kind of broke my heart a little bit. Just kind of. Because it opened me up to realize, like, you know, I assume most, you know, kids are like that. If you spend 7 hours on your phone, you're not open to the world around you or engaged to the world around you. And I guess you would call that desensitizing. You know, the 9-year-old was just full of life.
Yeah, and it's not, these are not habits that will go away with time. They'll either be worse. Like right now, I think they said information doubles every 18 months, and it's going to get even more and more and more. But folks, loaded language from my mother used to say, it's not about knowledge, it is about wisdom. Wisdom is equal to knowledge plus the truth of the inner spirit. And she was talking about the Holy Spirit, as she is extremely close to God. And you know, but the truth of the experience that you mix with your knowledge, and then that becomes wisdom and how to use it. And so this is terrifying, but I, you know, one thing that has helped me, not an antidote, but just some hope I've been given. I have always told my players that if you do this right, And the definition of success and how it stays with the myelin tissue, you work hard, you suffer greatly, you succeed or fail. Hmm. But here's the thing. You set goals, work hard, train hard, you suffer greatly, you succeed or you fail. Now, if you fail, you learn. Mm-hmm. If you succeed, confidence grows. But the point is, with too much information, too many, and when you use it for easy,
yep.
and instead of, and I'm going, that's my loaded language. I'm going to use this a lot. Instead of efficiency, it's dangerous. But here's, I always say it's low hanging fruit. Most people aren't competing. You're only going to compete against 10% of the people out in the world. Most people are lazy now. Most people are not trailblazing. Most people do not have the passion to go after it. But here's the danger. We now, in our administrative positions and all over the place, we're lowering the bar so greatly. We lower the bar in entertainment. We've lowered it in music. We've lowered it in the classroom. We're lowering it on the tennis court, folks. I always bring up about the abbreviated scoring system, the participation trophies and all those things. But when you lower the bar, what you do is you basically now have no way of separating the cream from the crap, and when you can't separate the cream from the crap or the in-between, you got crap, you got in-between, you got the cream. You've got to have underachievers, overachievers, and most of us are in between. But you've got to have a way for the achievers to take off and run with the ball. So what we have, a national coach told me recently, he goes, I look out there and everybody's pretty good, but nobody's exceptional. And this is so true. Is that what you're seeing too with tennis players? I mean, it's just they're all sort of about the same. My friend told me down there, he said, I used to want to watch tennis. There were a lot of unique personalities. There were a lot of intricate things. You'd see the guy on court 32, he's busting up his racket, but the guy had a little bit of passion going on there. But now it's just generic. It's like medication time, and you're saying, what in the world is going on here? So it's lowering the bar definitely is something we've got to address. We're going to be back here in a second with loaded language some more, and I want to get you all thinking about this. Take away those cell phones when your kids go on to court. Our kids, I want to tell you something, I'm so proud. My son, my daughter, gave back participation trophies for swimming. My son did it for baseball. He gave back the participation certificate. Do not let your kids have stuff that does not matter and if they suffer and get something, it's wonderful. They'll know what a real diamond is, but this counterfeit of participation stuff, it needs to change. We'll be right back. It's Chuck Creasy, American Tennis.
This is Coach J.P. Weber of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. In my 30 years experience in coaching tennis, I've never seen a better tennis training situation for children than Coach Creasy's Total Tennis Training Camps. Chuck Creasy has coached them and trained them in every arena from juniors to collegiate to professional tennis, and over 15,000 children have improved their games at his summer tennis camps. Find out more at chuckcreasy.net. That's chuckcreasy.net.
Back and says USA. He won't buy nothing and he
Coach Chuck Creasy with American Tennis every week at noon on Wednesdays. We have Ryan Young here, and my golly, I mean, this whole topic, I feel like we could go on forever. We're just now starting to get to some of the loaded language, things that are critical. If you listen to the show enough, you know that I say this. Thanks to Alex Slezak, who we'll have on next week, and talk more about loaded language. Ryan, I'm going to start out of the blocks here. This is yours. You traveled 27 countries. You lived in the back of a gas station for a couple weeks in Uzbekistan or Turkey, I forget, in
Turkey.
And then Uzbekistan, you traveled to Uzbekistan without money, went through the qualifying, got to the finals. Here's the beautiful thing. You played professional tennis for over 5 years. You traveled 27 countries. People say, what was he ranked? How much money did he make? You got, regardless of the price, the value. Bill Tim out there many years ago in Dallas recruiting for Vanderbilt, he said, young people know the price of everything, but the value of very little. You brought that back, this quote right there. You want to read that quote there?
Your comfort bears no fruit.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's funny. I was just thinking about this. We're talking about desensitization. So the opposite would obviously be sensitization,
you
right?
You become sensitive to, and folks, the world will desensitize us. You know, have you ever seen a desensitized, extremely wealthy person that lives only for money? The greatest holiday, the greatest... I had a very good friend growing up that got into some bad stuff, and I got to tell the story, and I'm not going to give his name, but one of my dear friends, and he was about mid-20s, and I went and saw him, and he had stacks of money laying around, and I go, what in the heck, I didn't say heck, are you doing? I want to take you outside and whip your butt. We had plenty of tennis courts fights, but I said, I'm going to whip. He said, no, he said, just make a little money, sell a little marijuana to kids or something like that. I go, what? He says, yeah, I got enough money. I got it. He ended up serving time and ended up, we spent some great times afterwards after he got out. But here's what he said. He said, I was desensitized. He said, I would fly one weekend with a beautiful woman to Las Vegas. Next weekend, I'd fly to Switzerland and spend the week going skiing and Then I would go and I'd play golf in Palm Springs. I would do this. And he said, I had so much money. It was just, I got desensitized. Nothing really, everything became boring. That's what happens when a person becomes desensitized. A highly sensitized person, Ryan, and I'm not ashamed to say this because the good Lord said, if you're ashamed of me in this life, my Father will be ashamed of you in the next. But anybody who is close to God will experience more sensitivity in the look from a child, a flower outside, a music from a song, time with a friend, any of these things that have great value, whereas money gives you, that's the price of things, but the desensitization is so we are not, we're living in this world, but we're commanded to not be of this world. Folks, that's the whole trick, is the lack of this desensitization is going on, starts very, very in a deep place in our souls. And it comes with our relationship with God. And if I ever have trouble, I know I'm drifting away from God, and we all have that. But anyhow, Ryan, okay, so talk about your comfort bears no fruit and the desensitization.
Yeah, your comfort bears no fruit. I guess the... you know, one level below that would be desensitization makes you unable to, and it gives you the wrong perspective of hardship, which hardship you must have and deal with in the right perspective to bear fruit or to do anything great. I've recently been reading this book by Theodore Roosevelt. He lost the election of 1912, and he was so in so much anguish and so much emotional pain that he put himself through the hardest possible challenge he could find on the earth. So he he went down to Brazil and he did a 1,000-mile hike through the Amazon River, through the rainforest, through the jungle, black rivers, almost died like 5 times. And he gave everything he had in the election and lost, and he didn't get comfortable. He put himself through the hardest challenge that he could possibly find to better himself. And I think that's one thing that our culture and society doesn't breed with participation trophies, with not allowing people to lose, is that you do become desensitized, because if you're sensitive and you have a passionate and a full heart, you winning and losing is something that you have to learn to deal with. And hardships are the only way, I think, that you can learn to become great.
Pain is the only way that you learn what real joy is.
Well, exactly. I was going after a girl and didn't get her, and I had to kind of deal with that. That was
loaded language. You can't put in what the good Lord left out. Okay. All right. Yeah. Sorry. Okay, Ryan, you got to have the ability, desire, opportunity. You might have the opportunity, and you had the desire. And you can't put in the looks that the good Lord left out. So sorry.
That's right. I'll have to deal with that. But I think hardship is something that perhaps maybe our society and culture and parents, you got to let your kids deal with hardship and the tiebreakers. I mean, what's harder, losing a tiebreaker for a third set or losing a third set match, 7-5 in the third, and having to face yourself and having to deal with that after the match, instead of maybe running to your cell phone or running to your friends. But gosh, giving your heart and losing, I think one of my biggest moments in my career for sure was I lost the last match of my college career, 7-6 in the third, last match on court, I think 11-9.
16-14 tiebreaker.
Yeah, a third set tiebreaker. And having to really look inward and face myself, and it's a hardship of, look, I want to be a professional. I just lost 7-6 in the third, my last match on court. I let my teammates down. I let my coaches down. I let my family, myself down. And having to look at that right in the mirror and get back up the next day and practice, and move and somehow try to move forward, that hardship I think was one of the anchors in me moving forward.
Well,
in tennis you, and
27
life, sure.
countries and all that you're doing, and that's a short 7 or 8 years ago or 8-9 years ago now, but I remember. Like it was yesterday, the very next morning, you were out on the tennis court. I mean, I was still devastated. I had Kleenex tissues, not crying for the team losing, but I saw you hurting and the devastation there. You're out the next day, and your words were, I said, Ryan, how could you come out and practice after that devastating loss? You said, well, today's the first day of my professional career.
Yep.
Yeah, and you definitely – extremely powerful moment in your life, and even as much as I'd seen, that was a very, very powerful thing. But you speak the truth here. I gave a talk about 3-4 weeks ago to a group of 12-year-old youngsters at a zonal, and the message was on don't be a tweener, an in-betweener. A tweener is like a wiener, and folks, you've heard me say this before, but the levels of progression as people compete, we have wimpies, or the very lowest, and we allow people to be wimpies all the time. They lay out for different reasons, but basically wimpies don't even get to the court. They have disclaimers and mysterious. And then you have a little bit better than that's whiners. They do it, but they complain. And the wiener is sort of between the whiner and the winner. But the wiener is an in-betweener, and I read the definition of the wiener or the tweener. Tweener is you can play two positions, but you don't do either one of them very well. Then the winner, I told the kids, you have to define what the winner is, and the damage of participation trophies, the damage of not playing out full matches. And we do this to ourselves, and I everyone I talk to, as I say, do not abbreviate matches. Do not abbreviate sets. Do not give participation trophies out. Do not make a party out of something that is not. And this is the best I can say. I had a player one time that was really a tweener, tremendous athlete, great athlete, just everything is there, great shot-making ability, but he never, when he got tough, he just never could push himself through. His father, listen to this loaded language. He said, my son always had a problem with shooting an arrow into the air, and wherever it landed, he would run over and draw a bullseye around it. But we're doing that with everybody now. There's a definite lack of outrage. There's definitely with bad things that are happening. But the desensitization is a great evil, Anyhow, we're going to go down here and go over a few of these things. You need a bridge while you're in teaching. Do you remember a long time ago, I'm using this with you, but do you remember me telling you about when you have the greatest message in the world, that it doesn't matter even if you have the greatest talent in the world to work with, you need to make sure that the bridge is there for your message to get across to that talent? Do you remember that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think you were talking about a violin, the bridge of the violin.
I was the bridge of the violin. Mm-hmm. That's right. Do you remember the analogy?
Yeah, I do. I don't remember exactly this. I mean, I remember without the bridge, the violin, you can't, the strings won't
hold
up.
Okay, well, here's the scenario. Let me use the tennis perspective. You need a bridge. Doesn't matter the talent, you always need a bridge. Here's what we do as teachers. We've got all this great information. You can go to internet, YouTube, and you can watch Federer workout. You've got all these things to make it easy, as you say. Okay, so why don't people do this? Why don't they? Well, number one, they're not developed in the myelin tissue. They've got too many GPSs, too many opportunities. So what happens is this. I said, you might have the best information. You got the best message in the world. You could be Roger Federer, and you were trying to help an 8-year-old or 12-year-old kid. But the danger, and nothing works unless there is a bridge for, an emotional bridge for that connection. I said, it's like the talent is represented by a Stradivarius violin. That's the talent of the young person. Okay, you're Mozart and you're playing your favorite violin concerto and you've played it 1,000 times and it's the best ever. And you're playing it like crazy, but nothing happens unless you have that little piece of balsa wood that connects, that the strings lay over, that lays to the body of that violin to reserve the reverberations, so the vibrations. So it doesn't matter if you have Stradivarius talent. It doesn't matter if your teacher is Mozart or Federer or Thomas Edison or Albert Einstein. The amount of information that does not go anywhere because there is not the bridge. Now, here's the point. The student must build their bridge through hard work, pain, suffering, and defeats.
Yep.
The bridge then is not just built, it's recognized, used, and there's a lot of traffic that takes place over that bridge, right?
Absolutely.
After it breaks down.
You know, it's funny, people, we could give so many great examples. Abraham Lincoln, how many times did he lose? How much defeat did he have to handle? George Washington, I mean, gosh, I just told a story about Theodore Roosevelt. You know, Michael Jordan, how many games?
If he had not been cut, look.
Yeah.
Somebody dispute this. If Michael Jordan had not been cut his sophomore year, I'm throwing it out there on the UR Tennis Network, he would have never been the great champion.
Never Michael Jordan, yeah.
And we don't cut kids. Mm-hmm. We don't cut kids because we don't want them to hurt.
Yeah. Yep.
I go back to the fifth grade. How old are you in fifth grade? 11?
10, 11. Yeah.
11?
Mm-hmm.
I got cut from the basketball team in Indiana. We got cut.
Yeah.
Can you imagine cutting an 11th grader now? Or an 11-year-old. 11-year-old. I got cut. I cried for a week, and my dad said, you don't like it? Start running every day back from your paper route and start shooting enough baskets. My dad just said that. Never got cut and never wanted to again. So the point is, it's just like your loss. We protecting our children from these setbacks.
Part of, inherently, we understand that you must fail to succeed, and yet the world, our culture does everything to prevent a child from having to go through that pain and that hurt of failing.
And I have so many parents make the mistake of children now milk injuries like nobody's business. We had 51 mysterious injuries. I call them the mysterious or the phantom injuries. 51 times kids pulled out of Kalamazoo 2 years ago. First of all, they're playing a 10-point tiebreak third set, which is not worth a crap. You hear me? I'm cussing. Not worth a crap, because it's not any good if you win. It's not any good if you lose. It's a tweener way for kids to develop confidence. That's number one. Number two, there's no penalty if you lose in the back draw. So kids came up with sore shoulders. They came up with mysterious injury. 51. It was pathetic. Pathetic. We've got a couple more. We're running out of time here, Hurley, and I've just gotten to about four.
About this one right there.
Okay.
You only learn to win to the level you cannot stand losing down to. I mean, that is
okay. Go ahead.
So
that's mine.
So
hey,
good. That's yours.
That's mine. I came up with that years ago.
Yeah, I mean, that's right on the money. You know, you're comfortable only to the level of pain. You know, as soon as there's pain, then either you're going to engage or you're going to fight or flight. I guess you're going to run. So I love that one, because I felt that in my tennis. You know, as soon as there was someone on my peer level when one of my buddies maybe I was always better than started to catch up with me, you know, it always provided a spark of, wait a minute, I'm supposed to beat you. This can't happen. I'm going to fight my heart out and go and work hard and hit more serves and go to the gym more and run more, because I can't stand to lose to you. But maybe to an ATP level player that may have been a little far out of reach, it seemed, you know, there wasn't necessarily that what's the quote? You know,
you only win to the level you cannot stand. Not
stand it.
Dislike,
right.
You cannot stand.
It means it's
miserable. You stay up and think about it. You hate it. It's detestable. When you dislike losing enough, you learn how to win at that level.
Yep.
And I'm sure every pro feels this the same way. And think of the trappings the pros have with money and stuff. And when they get comfortable enough, they stop going forward.
Yeah, it's funny. I remember having a conversation with Jesse Witten, who's a guy I looked up to, third round U.S. Open, you know, around 200 in the world his whole career, into the 100s. But everybody would say, wow, Jesse Witten hits the ball so well. He's, you know, he was up 2-1 on Djokovic at the U.S. Open. And I had this conversation. I said, Jesse, what is it? Why? What's holding you back? You know, I look up to you as a guy who wins challengers. Why can't you break in? And you're up 2-1 on Djokovic at the U.S. Open. What's holding you back? And he said, you know, belief. I don't believe in myself. I don't believe that I'm good enough to get there. Well, actually, really beneath that was, you know what, I can't stand it. I can't stand it enough that I'm not there. If he would have had that attitude, he would have been there,
yeah.
And he would have been a top 50 pro. But it didn't hurt bad enough in the position he was at.
And the other thing is not self-sabotaging when you do get there. That's the other end of it. A lot, it's not what you eat, it's what you digest is the loaded language. A lot of times people achieve and they're just not comfortable in the language. Well, folks, listen, we're about out of time. Next week, Alex Slezak will be with us. And we're going to start doing more and more loaded language, because this has been a fantastic show with Ryan Young here today. And follow University of South Carolina. What's your website real quick here before we go?
Gamecock Tennis Online.
Gamecock Tennis Online. Mine's chuckcreasy.net. And folks, we've
made in America, born in a heartland, raised up a family, a King James and Uncle Sam. He got the red, white, blue, fine high on a farm, Semper Fi tattooed on his Simpsons. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. America. Made in America. Made in America.
And this is Chuck Creasy reminding you that you are in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss. See you next week, folks, on American Tennis.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network